We are sharing screens.
Great.
Figure
402 on October 14th, 2025, calling to order the regular meeting of the City of Emeryville Transportation Sustainability Committee. Trying to take a roll.
Yes. Chair Matt Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor David Moore?
Here.
Moving on to item three, is there any public comment? I don't see any in the room. Do we get any comments?
None came through.
Okay, great. Moving to item four, approval of December 9th, 2025 regular meeting action minutes.
So moved.
I'll second.
Mayor Moore?
Aye.
Chair Solomon?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Moving to item 5.1 with regard. Version of required bike parking ratios from estimated automobile parking demand to building square footage.
Yes, thank you. Are you doing it or am I doing it?
I can do it for you if you want to.
Sure.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. I shall not share. Well, thank you for having me today. As the state slide, we're going to talk about converting our current bike parking ratios from using the estimated automobile parking demand table in the Emeryville Municipal Code to the building square footage of use classifications. Slide. Here we go. So what we're going to go over is why are we even talking about this? Why are we converting bike parking ratios? Looking at the comparison of Emeryville and MTC's TOC bike parking requirements, looking at current Emeryville bicycle parking regulations, doing a quick comparison to other cities, and then providing with proposed changes. So why are we doing this? So MTC administers OVAC grants, and starting in spring of next year, TOC compliance will be priority. So transit-oriented communities have been identified throughout the region, and they're anywhere within any place that has a transit station and half mile radius around that. So Emeryville's Amtrak station is one of the identified places. So in order to continue being eligible for grants, Emeryville needs to show that it's compliant in four policy areas. And we are, we're compliant in all of these areas: land use and density, affordable housing, parking management, multimodal access. We're working on demonstrating that compliance. Right now we have to submit where our ordinances and how we do all of this. But what we do need to do, the one thing that isn't consistent, is our bicycle parking requirements. Next slide. So the amount of bike parking that we require is actually more than sufficient. What MTC's TOC policy says is that we need to have one secured space per residential unit, and we exceed that. We have one long-term space for studios and one bedrooms, and two long-term spaces for units with two or more bedrooms. So we're not looking at changing anything about residential. What we're focusing is on anything that's not residential. The TOC policy only says anything about office spaces. It doesn't talk about any other use types, but what it says for office is that you need to have one secured space per 5,000 square feet. And our current regulations say that you have to have both one long-term and one short-term space for every 4,167 square feet. And why is it that weird number? It's because that's a conversion based on converting our car table for estimated parking demand to one bicycle space for every 10 car spaces. So you do the calculation for the cars and divide it by 10, and that's what your bicycle parking requirement is. This is a pretty antiquated way of doing things. We looked at other cities and none of them do that. And this is what MTC is saying. You need to make sure that your bike parking is based on square footage, not on automobile parking. And it doesn't make sense to just change office uses, but to update our entire bicycle regulations. Next slide, please. So here's a little example, right? So in the gray, and I do have, oh no, I don't, for that one. This is just a sample. So in the gray is what the estimated parking demand table says. And then in the pink is how we convert that to bike parking. So it's just basically moving the decimal over or moving the zero over to get to the bicycle parking demand. So this is what we've been doing. And this is how we started off this exercise. This is what do we currently require? You can see the offices highlighted there in yellow. If we go to the next slide. And then we also looked at seven other cities. We looked at our neighboring cities. I also chose Alameda because we have a lot in common with our development regulations and housing policy and transportation policies. San Francisco, because people always ask about that. Davis, because of the bike city. And Sacramento and LA, because they had, I believe, fairly recent modifications to their bicycle regulations. So what we can see here is that they all are using square footage. They might use square footage calculated slightly differently with occupied square feet or gross square feet, but they're all using square footage. They pretty much, almost all of them, say have a default of too long and too short term spaces. And other than that, there's a pretty wide variation in the square footage calculations there. You can see everywhere from 50,000 for a square foot for San Francisco. And then, you know, where's Berkeley? Berkeley's 2,000 per square foot, right? So very, very big difference there. So we have not heard any issues with our current ratios. So the basic idea is to continue using those, but to modify them and round them. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few moments here. So if we move forward. So we're going to go through these pretty quickly. This is just so you can get an idea of what other cities' bike parking tables look like. So this is Oakland. This is an excerpt from a very long table. Next slide. This is Berkeley. This is their entire table for non-residential. And the only difference between their one per 1,000 square foot or one per 2,000 square foot is proximity to the development areas around the Ashby and North Berkeley BART stations and a little bit around the Cal campus. Other than that, it's just very straightforward for the whole city. Next slide. Alameda, this is their entire table. This is very simplified, streamlined approach. Next slide. San Francisco, this is an excerpt. It's very, very long, detailed code as one might expect for San Francisco. Next slide. Davis, this is their full table. And so they all have an approach very similar to Alameda. Next slide. In Sacramento, this is an excerpt. They divide theirs between more suburban and more urban areas of the city. Next slide. In Los Angeles, this is again, this is their entire code for non-residential. So streamlined one pager. Next slide. So looking at themes and methodology for what we're proposing here. So replace multiple calculations. Right now in our parking regulations, we have some parking based on the number of employees, some based on number of students or seats. And one of the themes here is that all of these other cities, for the most part, not universally, but they primarily use square footage. So using square footage to streamline it and make it easier and more usable for everyone involved. And then using to be determined, we should continue to use those for uses with high variation. So an example of that would be schools. Schools is a single use classification. You could have a high school come in on the north side of town with a campus with 350 people and full day of classes. And you could have a school come in that is elementary school and is maybe only 30 people closer to the open border on the south side of town. Those are both schools, but they're very different. So using TBD for things that don't come up very often or things that could be very unique, even though they're within the same use classification. And so those be looked at and assessed as part of conditional use permit on a case-by-case basis. So after that, looking at the surveyed cities showed the wide variation we talked about in required parking. So as I mentioned, generally keeping the existing conversions to square feet, but rounding for convenience. And then create the simplified table for bicycle parking similar to the other major cities. And for square footage calculations using gross square footage as already defined in our municipal code. So not changing anything, keeping everything straightforward. And so I do have a hard copy of this to make it easier to look at if you would like one.
There you go. There's more available that we don't want to get invested.
But this is basically shrinking down everything to as simplified as we could get. So we have general categories of use types in our planning regulations. Residential use types, which I mentioned, we're not looking to change those. Commercial institutional use types, and that's a wide variety of uses, as you can see here. There are a lot of them that had a default of the same amount, and here we've rounded it to one per 3,500 square feet. So I'd say maybe a third to half of the uses all had that. And then the remaining ones, we simplified, or some of them had seats or square footage. We kept the square footage. And then keeping the ones identified as TBD. For industrial use types, those don't come up very often. The vast majority of those had one per 10,000 square feet. Just simplified it to have them all be matchy-matchy. Agricultural use types are already all TBD. And communication, transportation, utilities, those were mostly TBD. There are also some specified, but they're things listed like train stations and communication towers. So highly specific uses that could have great variation within those individual uses as well. So keeping those TBD to really address specific situations as they arise. So, and then it has a definition there for to be determined within the context of the conditional use permit process for the proposed use. So really assessing on, as I mentioned. Next slide. So here we are in the process. This went to BPAC on October 6th. They wanted to do a deeper dive into residential, looking specifically at studios and one bedrooms as a separate process, but they did recommend approval of all the other use types and proposed bike table. And then here we are today. And then this is going to Planning Commission for a study session October 23rd. Then we'll go back to BPAC and come back here if you would like me to return in November. And then Planning Commission for recommended approval to City Council in January. And then after that, we will notify MCC of any approved changes so we can hopefully be eligible for future funding. And that's that. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Navar. Any questions?
I have two questions.
Yeah.
So did they MTC brought this to our attention, or did we kind of take the initiative to listen?
So MTC is doing a fairly robust outreach process. We are part of a housing collaborative in Alameda County, and they came and presented there and had a workshop on it where people from around the county came and did assessments in person, like really brief ones. And then they also hired a consultant to help review all of these different policy areas. It's actually pretty complicated because while they have generalized rules for everybody, people write their rules really differently. So the consultant is there to help bridge that gap. But they're doing a pretty robust process. I've had several meetings with them, and this is the only area we've identified so far that needs to be changed in our code.
So, okay, so they told us that it was a concern or area of
concern.
Okay. Yes. Are we currently being held up because of this for any grant consideration?
No, but everybody needs to be compliant by spring of 2026. They do not have a specific date,
right.
But considering the number of meetings a change to bike parking needs to go through, I wanted to get this going right away.
Were they not happy with like X number of bike parking spots per car parking spot, and car parking spot is per square footage, therefore bike parking is essentially per square footage? Like, just that math seems straightforward to me.
Yeah, it's just that it's an extra step, and it's basing it on an estimated parking demand that doesn't necessarily speak.
It's messy.
It's messy.
Got it.
And like I said, no other local jurisdictions that I assessed do that. So it's just cleaning it up.
Got it. And my last question is, since we're in the process of cleaning it up,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is our opportunity to make it, you know, clear and what we want it to
yes.
be. And I noticed that the transit-oriented communities, cities, it's like the term short-term and long-term,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of antiquated. It's more like secure or I guess what are we moving away from short-term versus long-term?
No, we're not.
Should we be?
No. The MTC doesn't specify what that ratio needs to be. If you would like, we can go back and look at the other cities, but all of them except Berkeley did specify short and long-term.
Could you remind me what is long-term, like just secure? Is that the way
So all of them need to be secure, but what's your definitions for secure, right? So short-term is meant for someone who's visiting. So, that could be a customer, that could be someone making a delivery, something of that nature. Long-term is meant for someone like an employee who's working there all day, or in a residential context, someone who lives there. So long-term needs to be indoor, covered. Think of bike lockers, think of bike cages, think of you need to go into the building and there's a designated room. Those are the sorts of things that would be long-term bicycle parking. Short-term is when you pull up in front of the restaurant and there's a bike rack there on the sidewalk or immediately adjacent to the restaurant.
Yeah, I kind of think of like publicly accessible and secure, like kind of like
correct.
Like a member of the public cannot get to these long-term
exactly.
spots.
Yes, that
necessarily.
That is accurate.
And I'm wondering if that's why the MTC definition or the transit-oriented cities definition doesn't use the term short-term and long-term. Is there some background on that?
I don't know why specifically, other than I think they didn't want to get into the weeds on that, because different jurisdictions are going to see that they have different needs or different ratios for that. Some jurisdictions like ours mostly keep it a one-to-one ratio, the same for short and the same for long, with few exceptions. Some jurisdictions like Oakland have a lot more variation for what they require for short and long term for some uses, not all. So I think on MTC's part, they're just trying to make sure that people in station areas are able to access bicycle parking at a reasonable rate.
Got
and
it.
Make sure the cities are providing it. They're not trying to say, and you need to have 0.25 and you need to have 0.75. It's already all of the regulations to review are complicated enough.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No, that's it.
So my question, and maybe this depends a little. So I know for residential projects, we have a parking maximum.
For vehicles.
For
uh-huh.
cars. I can't remember whether it's for commercial or the other variety of uses. My question is though, so feel free to correct me if this is wrong. So for the commercial uses, except those listed below, of one per 3,500, that'll result in more bike parking than the previous number, which is one per 40, 167, whatever. But if it's still, I can't remember what the car number was, but the car number was like 10 times the bike number.
Uh-huh.
And so this will now result in it being whatever, 8 times the bike number. But it's still,
how about we go to that slide?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure we're talking about the same
thing. Yeah.
Keep going. Oh, forward. There we go. So
the offices all is 2.4 car spaces per 1,000 gross square feet.
Yeah, so we're not changing anything about that.
Yeah, so that's still what it is.
Yeah.
The bikes will be
One
per 3,500, let's call it.
Oh, yeah.
Two per 3,500 because it's one short, one long. So let's call it one per 1,750, if I'm reading it correctly. So that still results in way more car spaces.
We kept offices as a line item. If you look.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
It's okay. So we just rounded over 170 to 4,000 for tidiness.
Okay. So then it's 2 total spaces per 4,000, which is 1 per 2,000.
Which is way more than the MTCs.
Right.
Yeah.
And also way less than the number of car spaces.
Yes.
That we'd be mandating.
Okay.
Well, so the way to look at this is that we do have the vehicular parking max. So you need a conditional use permit to go over that. For bicycles, this is a minimum.
Yeah, so the car space is the maximum. That 2.4 per thousand.
I think it's plus 10% of that. Is that it's
estimated?
Yeah, it's an estimated demand, but it, or we have a vehicular max.
No, this is not a. I guess
we're not saying that they have to provide 2.4 spaces. They do not have to.
Oh, so this is just an estimate based on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are no maximum or minimums for vehicular parking right now.
Okay.
So if you can build a building and not provide any vehicular parking.
Right.
And the numbers here are estimated parking demand. So for bike parking, it will be the minimum parking that is required and we are basing that on estimated parking demand.
Gotcha. Okay. I guess my broader, well, maybe I'll keep it an observation. So maybe I'll see if there's any public comment in the room. No public comment. So maybe I'll just say I should say, I think this all makes sense to like clarify. I guess my broader thought, and then we can talk about in greater depth separately, is that we're still. The estimated parking demand, to the extent that this is used for developers to build parking spaces in our city, they follow the numbers that are on this table and this table, they're going to build, let's call it, four times as much car parking as bike parking.
Potentially,
yeah,
but they're not required to.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess that. Because it's good that we're separating them. And if developers follow this, it locks us into a load share where bikes sort of can't be above 20% because there's just not enough parking for them. I know like people don't have to follow this, but if developers build the estimated parking demand and they build the minimum bicycle parking, then
you're noting that the ratio is there.
Like we've separated them, which is good, but also we've separated them and the we've separated them at a level where estimated parking demand is 10 times the estimated bicycle,
mm-hmm.
which maybe is just a true fact of
in looking at the if we go back to the office, I also have a hard copy of this. This is convenient. Just looking at the office one, because that's the one that NTC is focusing on. It does not appear to be an exact science to how this is determined, right? So knowing that we haven't heard any explicit issues with our ratios, it seems reasonable. And also because it's a minimum. And I'll say that in my experience, it's been a few years since I did current planning, but people often provided more than the minimum for bicycle parking anyway, either because they saw the need or because the approval body felt that there was a need.
Okay, sounds good. I just wanted to, I guess, make sure I was interpreting that correctly. And
they're not the same yet. That's true.
No, it's we can drink. David, any comment on this?
I'm just trying to figure out, like, from this, like, it's like one of the big take home points is we're going from the 4170 effective square footage, one base per down to 4,000. It's a rounder number, gives us slightly more, right? Which is good. And then there's the, I assume that same philosophy is being applied to all these other categories, because we don't have the current, we just have the proposed short-term and long-term for everything here. Is that correct?
I can bring up a sheet if you'd like to see more specific.
No, I think I just want to know that it's like the philosophy being that kind of throughout here. Okay.
Round it and generally round in the favor of more parking.
And maybe this might be like a follow-up topic, I guess, trying to think of, like, for example, I live in a condo development where some people have garages. Would that garage then satisfy that need for the long-term secured spot. You know, they have a place to put their bike, or would that necessitate like some new bike enclosure requirement in like a cluster of townhomes, for example?
Right. So like I said, we're not looking to change the residential requirements, but practically speaking, we require there to be something to secure the bike to.
Okay. And maybe that's a follow-up topic. I can learn more about short and long-term and the variability of that. But I think in terms of the number of spots, this is fine.
And I think I might have just misunderstood your example. I was picturing like a townhome with an individual garage. Do you mean like, is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So say there's a townhome with an individual garage, and I could then, maybe I have a, I choose to do like a hook on the ceiling off, you know, mm-hmm. next to my car, and I put a few bikes there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have some like wall rack, and I can kind of pick what works for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to move in there and there's already, then there's just like a hoop rack on the ground because they thought that was a requirement, I might be a little annoyed by that. So I'm kind of wondering like how hands-on are these definitions for the short-term and long-term, right? Do you see on it?
Very hands-on, because when we review new developments, there's bicycle parking regulations that talk about the dimensions, about rack requirements, about location requirements. And so all of that is reviewed and assessed, and that would be very atypical for someone to propose a hoop rack within a garage. That would not.
Okay, that's good. That's something for me to look into later. Definitely, I wish when my building was built, there was more scrutiny. We have a common area garage where the developer just threw down like three of those like fender bender bike racks,
yeah.
where it looks like they can hold a lot, but effectively you only get one on each end.
Yeah.
And it's like four bikes in like a massive area. Mm-hmm. So, probably our modern standards would do better than that.
Yeah, I mean, our bike parking regulations, it was 2009 where they really got upgraded. So anything built before then,
2008,
approved before then, right? So if it was built in 2008, it was probably approved a few years before that. It does not have anywhere near the same requirements we have now.
Sounds good. I support moving forward with this. So do you need a motion or just direction or?
If you feel satisfied with this and that I don't need to come back in November for any additional information, then I will.
Barring major changes from.
If we have significant changes, I will come back.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve this proposal modification.
And I'll second that.
Motion on the floor. Chair Sullivan?
Aye.
And Mayor Moore?
Aye.
All right.
Okay. Thank you for answering all our questions.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Excellent. Moving to 5.2, which I guess is with me.
Yeah, I could lead you into it. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll delegate to you.
Yeah. So the November 11th meeting falls on Veterans Day. But we are looking for an opening in both your guys' calendars to reschedule the November meeting.
It's probably a little bit more open. But here's David, do you
have do you have any proposed dates?
We don't, but another Tuesday that month could probably work at this time. That seems to work with staff. It could. So did you check other committees? Okay.
Yeah. The 4th and 18th are councils.
Yeah, councils. Yeah. And then the 25th gets into Thanksgiving week. But 25th is not the holiday, so that could possibly work.
That will be out of town.
Okay.
Then.
What's on the agenda for November?
Let's see. So we have 40th Street Public Art Wayfinding coming in. We have a Powell Street concept plan approval to be forwarded to council. We have a compost and program update, and then an update on our urban tree project.
I see.
So the only, I think, mission critical one is the public art one for 40th, but I could talk to Amber about that. It could be delayed to December, if so a cancellation is possible as well.
Yeah, I'm I'd say if it doesn't set us back, I'd be okay with canceling.
Sorry, I don't know why.
I'm happy to meet.
But also don't. That's from our list. Can you review our future agendas list on the other one side? Just see if there's anything else that we're skipping
at. When you say mission critical, the wayfinding, what's the...
It's something that we need to get. The consultant on board needs to get some approvals through council. Okay. So we've been kicking the can down a few months. So we pushed it out to November so far. So another month, we're not sure. I don't know if it's a contract timing issue. I got to talk to Amber in our community development department about it.
And I see the West Powell concept plan approval.
And that one is not necessarily, that one could go to December. That'd be...
For November, we were also going to invite ETMA.
ETMA should come in, yeah. ETMA wanted to come in and talk about future grant opportunities and other planning efforts to combine with our staff, talk about their fleet potential upgrades and stuff like that. Yeah. So it could also be December.
December.
Yeah, because I prefer the Tuesday time slot, and then we probably want to avoid the council ones, and then we hit Thanksgiving. So I'm okay with December if that's not... I guess if there was a reason that it would need to be urgently scheduled, is that something we could sort out over email as well? It's a scheduling thing.
Yeah, I believe we can.
Okay. Yeah.
We can make it a special meeting at that time, I think. Yeah. Call that. Yeah.
Sounds good.
So I guess cancel unless otherwise your information happens.
Okay. You guys want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to cancel November.
Second. Got a motion. Let's see. Chair Solomon.
Aye.
And Mayor Moore.
Aye.
Motion passes. November is canceled.
And just in terms of next steps, you'll follow up with us?
We'll follow up with you guys just to let you confirming that there's no mission critical items. Okay. If there is, we'll talk about a special meeting by the time.
Excellent. That's all done with the action items. Now we are moving to information items. 6.1 I-580 truck access study. Kelsey.
Great. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to come out here. I'm not Kelsey Rodriguez, but I'm Mark Leon. I'm the sustainability program manager for Caltrans District 4. Kelsey is part of our division of transportation planning local assistance, and one of the key projects that is coming out of our planning office is the I-580 truck access study, which I'll sometimes refer as a TAS. And it's really focused on a couple of key core principles from Caltrans. So that is equity, safety, climate action, and economic prosperity. So this is really focused on equity, environmental justice, and I'll get into that. So to some, this might be a project update or an item that you may have not heard before. So with that, in the next slide, in this presentation, I'll be going over a couple of these key parts, which is study project overview and the geographic area, which encompasses what the goals of the study are, our plan for engagement, both public and stakeholder engagement, coming up actually in November. And lastly, any upcoming work and events that are immediately coming up for your information. So in this next slide is just really an overview of where this task originated. And it originated from the West Oakland, West Oakland Community Action Plan, or WOCAP. And in WOCAP, it identified several strategies, and that including one strategy to examine the impacts or effects of removing the truck ban on 580. So this study really tries to answer or tackles the main question, which is, how would the removal of the truck ban on 580 affect safety, efficiency, reliability, throughput, velocity of the trucks on 880 and 580? But most importantly, or just as important, is how do we achieve equitable public health, particularly in impacted populations and communities? So that's a key part that we're trying to answer. So to try to answer that, this study is going to consist of those four components that you see up there on the screen, which is traffic studies, air quality and noise impact assessment, which is going to be provided by our air district, a racial equity assessment, and last but not least, a comprehensive community engagement strategy. So this study is really a collaboration with Oakland, the city of Oakland, us, the air district, et cetera. So that's the nexus for the study. So next slide shows the study area. And within that study area, which is that blue line, includes, of course, Amityville and the other cities that you see there, including but not limited to those. It includes the other arterials, also 880. And you see that orange line there, which is about 7 miles, stretches from the south from Foothill Boulevard in San Leandro to Grand Avenue in Oakland. Again, it's about 7 miles where that truck ban is. In the next slide, this is what the technical analysis and forecasting studies are going to focus on. So there's going to be a freight technical or a set of freight technical memos, which as you see there, are going to be looking at the existing conditions and future conditions, including a no action or no truck ban scenario, as well as other conditions with some recommended strategies. As I mentioned, there's going to be a component that will study the air quality within that study area in the previous slide that I showed, again, formed by the air district. And of course, in the next several slides, it's going to show the equity assessment by our consultant. Okay, so timeline, this slide here. We're at almost the end of 2025. Two TAC meetings have already taken place. As you see there, and there are five more going to be taking place through 2026 and probably through the beginning of 2027. The blue lines are the studies, analyses that are going to be taking place, starting with the traffic analysis and the others that you see there. And really important is we're going to have three rounds of public engagement, which I'll expand on, and first one being in November 12th. So that's a schedule that we're seeing. So it may it's going to wrap up sometime end of 2026, beginning of 2027. All right. So next slide is our set of seven goals. I know the text is pretty small there, but just to summarize what those goals are, first is to look at reducing exposure to air noise pollution from the trucks around the region in that study area, particularly for impacted communities. Secondly, is to reduce truck traffic on local streets, again, particularly for impacted communities. Thirdly, reduce the frequency of severity of truck collisions, so it's a safety impact. Fourthly, reduce road degradation and maintenance costs of roads, freeways. Fifth is identify potential strategies and lead lead agencies to support reduced truck traffic, local truck traffic exposure. Six is balance travel conditions and safety between those two corridors, 880 and 580. And last but not least is to improve goods movement throughout the study area. All right, so what's going to be included in studying those existing conditions? There are three components, which you see there: socioeconomic factors, freight factors, and environmental factors. And the metrics that you see below include, but are not limited to, those that you see there. I think part of the tag is to discuss those metrics that you see there. All right, next slide is about our public and stakeholder engagement plan. You saw in one of the previous slides in our in our schedule that we're going to have three rounds of public engagement, which include both in-person or virtual. Some community workshops might be in person, some others might be virtual, yet to be decided. We'll be distributing surveys as well as providing informational presentations. This is one of these, sharing information via social media or other means through email. That constant contact is one of the tools that we use. And again, as I mentioned, in terms of stakeholder engagement, we'll have five more tag meetings too, which have already occurred. And location-wide, in terms of where those public engagement meetings will, we'll have it throughout the study area. Next slide. These are some of the city partners that are included. Of course, City of Emeryville is there. We presented to the City of San Leandro a couple weeks ago. Tomorrow we'll be presenting to the air district. We're scheduling with the City of Oakland in the next 2 months, and we'll continue to update on our partner agencies on this. Not only do we have public agency TAC members, but on the next slide, we also have industry TAC members, including those that you see there. And also CBO TAC members as well that you see there. So there are three of those, and they are what you see there. So on the next slide. Okay, so November 12th is when we have our first virtual public kickoff meeting. It's supposed to be an hour and a half, not an hour there, 6:30. Caltrans, our staff is to promote the public kickoff meeting. We are using our current channels to share how the public can join this public meeting. We're passing out flyers and attending community centers to distribute information about this public engagement meeting. So that's the first of three that we'll have. Again, it's going to be virtual. I believe the TAC has information on the link to the virtual kickoff meeting, but there's word out there for that. If you need the link, I can certainly provide that to you. Okay. So next steps, this is really a summary of next steps. Again, the previous slide mentioned that we're having our virtual house coming up November 12th at 6:30 for an hour and a half. We are in the midst or just starting our traffic analysis. That's the first of the analyses that we're doing. And the air district is going to be performing their air quality analysis for within the study area. And the last slide, we do have contact information there. I know it's really small, but you'll be able to get more information about the forecast study information. There's an email there. I encourage you to certainly reach out to them. I'm actually twice removed from this project, but I'd be happy to answer questions. If not, there's the contact right there. So thank you, everyone. Really appreciate the opportunity to present.
Great, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Any questions?
I guess just understanding the rationale behind it, it seems like the truck ban in the first place was set up to, because people didn't want the pollution caused by these big trucks. But I guess by banning those trucks on 580, you've then driven the trucks into, they're covering more distance on city streets to get to their final destinations, which, I mean, it seems obvious that you're probably creating more local pollution that way. And I guess we're just, are we studying it to see if that bears out? Do I understand that correctly?
So the ban, which took place in the 50s or 60s, banned trucks off 580 and therefore routed the trucks mainly on 880 and local streets around there. So purpose of the study is to see what are the current impacts and what are the future impacts if the ban is lifted. So the impacts of communities that are currently affected, particularly on 880, but overall in the study area, but what are the impacts on communities on 580 as well too, which are part of the study area.
I see. Okay. Yeah, no other questions.
One question that I know you're both removed from the project and we're just kicking off the discussion, but is the expected outcome either we keep the ban as is or we just say before it? Like, are there expected to be a variety of other mitigations? Like, is 580, could 580 support trucks today of, like, is, yeah.
Yeah, so there, part of the study is to look at several alternatives, including a no action or keep the ban as it is. Mm-hmm. And other alternatives are, so the other alternative is to lift the ban. And with that, what are the impacts on the community? But also, what is it going to take legislation-wise if the ban is lifted? So it's going to require legislation to lift that ban. So if it comes to concluding that the ban is recommended to be lifted, then legislation-wise, what does it take to get to that stage?
That's a state decision.
That's a state decision. Ooh. That's right.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Let's move to public comments. No. Okay. Did any comments on this?
Seems like a reasonable idea, and probably the pollution aspect is going to become increasingly moot as large trucks are electrified, as are other vehicles. So, seems to make sense. Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Hugh, and thank you, Philip, for being on the tack and your interest, and look forward to hearing more about it as topic continues.
Thank you. And then one point of order is Matt Anderson called out sick today.
Yes.
So we got a bout of the flu going through our department right now. So he is out. And so 6.2 and 6.4, we do not have anybody to fill in for the presentation score. So we will have to skip today on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a long December.
Yes.
I guess we'll move to 6.3 then. 2026 Sustainable Streetscapes and Avalanche Street.
All right, so Adeline Street is something that we brought to you earlier this year to talk about a few alternatives. We had a motion from you to decide on a cheaper version of the Adeline. So our team has been working on that. So coming through with pretty much the same design, unfortunately. We're trying to get the 65% design ready for you. It wasn't ready quite for showing yet, but just kind of wanted to talk through what we are considering on the project, talk about schedule, and then give you a quick heads up on some upcoming council actions that are coming your way and kind of talk through some of that. So for Adeline Street, again, we are going for the paint and bollard technique throughout the corridor. We're trying to get class 4 bike lanes on Adeline from 36th Street all the way to 41st Street. This will connect up with other class 2 bike lanes on Adeline Street to the north area, and we have a kind of mix of class 2, class 4 getting all the way to the city border up on Adeline. There is, let me zoom in right here. This section between 36th and MacArthur San Pablo area where lane splitter is, there are quite a few driveways that we're contending with. So we are working on the radiuses here of how to best put in the bollards. We're looking at beefing up some of the intersection areas. So we're actually considering adding into the concrete at some of the intersection areas at the approaches. So what we've seen on other projects is we have had to replace a lot of the bollards right at the intersection. If we're able to put some concrete with bollards on top or something like that, we get a lot better driver compliance and better wide radius turns at the intersection. So we're trying to get that as part of this project. And it's not concrete all the way throughout, but at the key location. So trying to be budget conscious in doing so. So we are continuing that through. We are having parking on street for all the residents in this area who do, this block is pretty parked up throughout the day and overnight. And we are mindful of some of the roll-up door areas on this area as well, and making sure that the radiuses work for here. There's a few businesses that we've seen use small box trucks and have other loading demands that's a little bit more than a residential area. So we're trying to look at creative ways to maybe extend some of these parking areas and trying to change some of the configurations of these parking areas to make that work for all, but still have some protection for the bike. So there's some room to play with that we're working with. We are not going to continue through the San Pablo intersection. We don't want to trigger a full Caltrans encroachment permit or do anything that is, there's some other improvements coming to San Pablo in the future. So we're gonna get the improvements to the intersection and make sure that the line of sight and the line of the bike lanes are working appropriately across. I think the biggest thing and for the users of Adeline Street is if someone's using San Pablo as well as Adeline, they have been having trouble getting to the head of the queue. So getting these big bike boxes in here is one of the key parts of that. So getting some of these destinations right off of San Pablo when you're coming down Adeline or up Adeline is key. So that's the big win there. And then aligning some of these pathways through and kind of cleaning up how you kind of get through the intersection coming through if you're continuing south on Adeline. Continuing north, we have the Avalon Senior Housing complex here. The group here is very vocal. They've been in support of a few projects the city's done in the past. We had a mid-block crosswalk put in on San Pablo Avenue that they wrote many letters of support for. At the same time, we didn't have the resources available, but they were also asking for other crosswalk improvements on the Adeline Street side. This is our opportunity now as part of this project to do some items here. So we are looking to do a RRFB crosswalk at the Yerba Buena intersection. The reason we are not doing one right at the 39th Street intersection is just due to the closeness of the San Pablo intersection. But we are beefing up these crosswalks going through this area. The main parking lot area of the Avalon and where most people are, you know, exiting the Avalon Senior Complex is on the north side of the building. That's kind of where this Yerba Buena crosswalk is where the biggest need is. And moving forward to the top of the intersection, we are retaining a lot of the parking across this area. We have a few businesses in this area that have some loading needs. So we might have some loading parking spaces and also some ADA spaces added on this part of the block in the final version of this. We are retaining the bike share station at the end of the block. And then we are trying to see the best way to incorporate some of the 40th Street changes now as part of this project prior to 40th Street coming in next year. So that might be, we do a little bit of the concrete now, but none of the concrete in that intersection. Maybe we do it with paint posts and stuff like that. And that way we're hitting the budget of our 40th Street grant funded project versus our local funded, you know, sustainable streetscapes project. So we'll be kind of determining how best to approach that as we finalize that scope. We are trying to create this loading zone as part of this project. So this is something that we'd like to put in here. There is a long care need. What's the term, Mike, of this complex here on the corner?
Developmentally disabled Magnolia Place.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there's ADA loading is common at this location here on the corner. So we're trying to beef up the curb loading right here. Right now, they're kind of in a right turn pocket at the curb. So we're trying to make all the ADA grades work all the way to the sidewalk area through there. So there would be a lot more concrete improvements here than we initially anticipated, but I think it's a worthwhile effort to get that in. And then we are continuing all the way up to 41st Street and connecting to the new concrete improvements that we did up there about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And so that's where we're at. Sadly, we don't have the 65% shown some of this there. But the timelines of this are we are completing the 65% this month. That's including kind of our whole PS&E package. That's what we, you know, advertise to the contractors. So we, that PS&E package will be finalized sometime in November. We will probably post it in December as our current target timeline of advertising the project. And with that, we would have probably about a 1 month advertisement period, and we should hopefully have a bid and a contract for council sometime in early 2026 for some first or second meeting in January is what we're targeting. So with that, that will be one moment in time where we're coming into council and talking about finances of our Sustainable Streetscapes project. Prior to that, we are, and let me pull up our CIP sheet for Sustainable Streetscapes project. So just to review, this is our CIP SUT01 and our yearly funding table. So back in June 2024, we approved the current iteration of the CIP, or sorry, 24, 23. Either way, we approved the new CIP, and we did a kind of consolidation of all kind of outdated, kind of a lot of different CIP projects that are kind of scattered about, but all kind of related, and put them into the Sustainable Streetscapes project. And so all of that budget went into the Sustainable Streetscapes project. And moving forward, those budgets became a yearly budget of about $1.5 million, $1.46. And so we're right here past July 1st, so we're in the fiscal year 25-26 with a budget of $1.46 million that has not been touched yet. We're currently working on our Hollis Street project, which is our 2024 project, which is touching all of this funds and all of these funds over here in this pocket. We are at a point of the project on Hollis Street that, due to utility conflicts and other items that have popped up on the project, we are going to be coming in November with an ask to do an amendment to that contract to increase the budget to finish out the Hollis Street project, finish out some other paving items that are nearby the project as well. So as we have this contract and we have a good bid price on their pavement, so we're trying to get some value out of having this contractor mobilized and on site as well. So there will be an item the first or second meeting in November discussing that. And what we're going to be doing is possibly using part of the fiscal year 25-26 budget for the current project. And then when we come in December, in January of next year with the Adeline Street project, we have some other closed out projects that we will be bringing in and replenishing the Sustainable Streetscapes project funds. So that whole funding picture will be described in the November report and will be approved or proposed to be approved at council in January. But in November, there will be the first effort of finishing out this first project using the 25-26 money. So we are working on that right now and trying to figure out that final dollar amount to put on that report for you guys. So I think that is it for now for Sustainable Streetscapes Adeline Street. So with that.
Thank you. Yep. Maybe just one clarifying question on what you just said. So it sounds like even though Hollis is a little more than we expected, because we have some closed out projects that had some extra funding that we can
bring into this, we will still be able to accomplish the outline design that you just showed. That's our
suspicion. We're confident we can accomplish both. So, and then as we're here asking for money to complete the Hall Street project with some other items that have popped up, utility complex that have kind of had higher costs for some of the green infrastructure that we put in, we see opportunity to also add in some extra paving onto that same contract as well. So yes to extra paving on the current project, but also yes, still being able to accomplish Adeline as expected.
We're doing more.
None on Adeline Street. Since you did bring up Hollis, I was curious just about the duration of the project, because it's kind of been like a construction site for quite a while. Is there like a target end date in mind?
Yes. So right now, and Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, but it is the week of November 11th for the paving of Hollis Street is what our target is. So
to be scheduled, starting?
That's the starting of the paving of all of Hollis Street is our target right now. So that's about a 2-week process. So there's going to be a little bit of getting some of it done, and then there's going to be, you know, Thursday, Friday of the holiday with Thanksgiving, and then probably picking up and finishing in December.
The rain.
Yeah. And weather dependent.
It is weather dependent.
Yeah.
So the rain this week and a couple weeks ago.
Does that increase costs? Do those delays increase costs, or is it just...
It does, due to, you know, we have construction managers that are still contracted, and we're, you know, extends their contract out, but for the contractor themselves, if they're not working, it's not a working day. But they are still mobilized. There's rentals that are out there. Those still cost money.
Will the entire street be closed, or will it be like doing paving on parts and then having traffic routed in a way?
It's gonna be done in depends on which area, actually. So some areas will be done the whole block section. Some will be done half at a time. So it depends which area. So 45th to 53rd will probably be done half of the roadway. The other half will be one lane traffic in each direction. The areas between 53rd and Stanford, same deal, half and half. The intersections themselves, we're trying to find a time to do them at nighttime, not to affect the AM or PM traffic.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I asked, there's a huge billboard light up thing that says like paving coming in November, you know, make plans or something. Yeah. It's, you know, it's something big and scary. And like, what, as a driver, I just think like, okay, so Hollis is going to be out of commission in November. I'm just wondering what like the take home message should be for drivers. Like,
I think it's just expect a detour more and more so.
So there will be a detour because there might just be areas that are not traversable.
It should be traversable in each direction for the most part, and especially overnight.
Delays, is that?
Yeah, there might be a time where there's, you know, a detour. So, and most of the detours are, you know, one block over and coming around. It's very rare for us to do the detour where they're going all the way to San Pablo and going around. But it's been a tricky corridor.
Thanks for that. I know it's a bit off topic. Talking about it. No other questions for me.
No other questions for me. Any public comment on this item? All right. Any comments on this item?
No comments. Or do you need something from, you need endorsement or direction?
No, this one is just informational for now. And we will be coming back with more updates on it as Adeline develops. So
sounds good. Yeah. Thanks, Frank.
When is the, can you remind me the next time that the Adeline design will come to, does it come to this
You know, Adeline, let's see, it will probably just come up as an update as we're bidding it in December, January.
Okay.
So it might be a CIP update in December, and January might could be its own item, or it could just be just another CIP update of how it's progressing. Yeah.
And is it maybe too early to ask this question? Do we know yet what the next sustainable streetscapes project would be?
Not yet. We have a few in mind. Let's see. I'm trying to rack my brain. Yeah, I think it's Christie Avenue was one of the areas. So it's Christie from Shellmound Way all the way to 65th Street was. It's on the verge of, it's like PCI in the 70s. So it's one of those ones we want to get at least a slurry seal on it just to actually just do rehab. We're not sure on what we can fit in as far as, you know, ATP movies yet at this point. But yeah, I think as far as just pavement rehab, I think that's the next big one. Yeah.
Great, thank you. If nothing else, we can close that item. Skipping 6.4 for next time, and then 6.5 CIP tracking spreadsheet.
That, yeah, we'll highlight a few, but feel free to stop me or ask about others. So, okay, our Civic Center has finished its exterior wood windows project. So, all the windows have been upgraded throughout all Old City Hall, and let's see, and we are also, as part of that project, doing some minor work downstairs for the, is that the same contractor doing that? Or they did some of the work for the conference room downstairs?
That's almost the...
Okay, well, slightly related, we're working on the conference room downstairs, and that is expected to be completed later this month.
Oh, the windows, yeah.
The windows. And let's see, the site remediation and construction is ongoing for the courtyard area on Horton Street. So a lot of the bulk work of that has seems to be completed as I'm riding by there. So yeah, they don't have as many traffic control operations going on the street side, at least. I'm just going through some of the October updates, September updates. Okay, and then we have a citywide sewer lateral project, the rehab of city facilities. That has been taking place. We've replaced the sewer laterals here at City Hall. We've worked on a few others at other city facilities at the fire station on Hollis Street as well. I think, Mike, is there any more left to do?
Yeah, we'll be coming back for a contract amendment in order to complete there are two laterals at City Hall. We've completed the one onto Hollis. We need to complete the one onto Park Avenue.
Okay.
That will be that.
That's us complying with our countywide permit. And sustainable streetscapes, I talked about that a bit. But beyond just the Hollis Street side of the work, we have ordered benches for the marina area. We ordered some special ADA back ramp, or sorry, benches that are ADA. They have a different back on ramp. Yeah, mm-hmm. ADA compliant back ramps. Benches. Yeah, that's what it is.
Specific dimension.
Yeah. And so those have been. Yeah, those are on order, and I think they're about a month out from being completed at the manufacturers, what the last email said. So those will be installed now, probably by the end of the year, unfortunately. Wanted to get those done a little bit sooner, but a little bit backed up with the manufacturer. We have some solar-powered bus stop lights. We met with AC Transit at all of the bus stops. We came up with a game plan of how best to install these. So there will be a little slight reconfiguration of some of the bus stops of how we put in the poles. We might be adding a few more The semi seats themselves, those are those little green seats, we'll be installing a few of the semi seat poles and adding the lights on top of that, because they're a little bit more structurally sound than a typical sign pole that you see out there. These have a little bit of weight, so some of these poles that we've been putting them on, they're a little bit shaky. We don't want them to fall down. We want them to last a while, so working with AC Transit and they make a round on that. And let's see. We will be installing a bike detection light at 59th and Hollis in the coming month or two. I think the product has arrived. We're going to be testing it first at the shop, but installing it at 59th and Hollis. This is a light that will let you know that you are being seen by the detection system at the signal. And then beyond that, if that is successful, we'll be looking at seeing how best to implement that at other locations throughout the city and cost to do so, to see if we want to make that a more of a regular standard install at signals throughout the city. Emeryville Loop Project. We have been working on looking at the operations of the Emeryville Loop Project through a few consultants. We are getting ready to compile some reports on this and come to this committee hopefully in December. So speaking of that busy December meeting, this is one of the items that is on the docket. Our 40th Street project continues. We are in the phase of the NEPA environmental clearance phase, where the tribal leaders have been we have sent our packet of documents to the tribal leaders for their feedback and review. So we are going to be meeting with them to see what elements they want to see in our environmental document and what things to cite and other items that comes out of that process. But we are still targeting end of the year to finish the NEPA clearance of the project. Then let's see. Then we are doing our urban tree planting project. That is the street tree study listed here. The project is starting next week, is what I heard in a meeting this morning. And there will be a what do you call?
Groundbreaking.
Yeah. Groundbreaking.
Ceremonial treatment.
Golden shovels, I think. So out at the marina. It looks like it, I think it's next Thursday was the target, which hopefully is a good weather day. It looks like good weather right now. So I don't know if you guys have gotten invites yet, but it's
next Thursday.
Next Thursday. I think
this is for the first tree planting.
First tree plantings for the 50 trees to be installed or planted, not installed. Planted as part of the urban tree.
I haven't seen an invite.
I think it's in the work, so you might be getting it this week.
And make sure to have a gold shovel for our vice mayor, because the tree planting was one of her passion projects.
Definitely will do. Yeah. I think that's it for our regular updates. And if you have any questions on any other ones, let us know.
Any questions?
No questions.
I also don't have any questions, but good work to you. Any public comment on this? Any online comment cards?
No online comment cards.
Okay. No discussion items. We will move on to future agenda items. So we will have a full, maybe November, definitely December meeting. Any other agenda
items? I maybe had one. This was, you know, I think we had a really good discussion on the C-Click fix, how the internal ticketing was being tied together and how we've made a lot of improvements on that. And there was a lot of discussion around the C-Click fix and how we handle those issues. And I'm kind of envisioning a follow-up discussion on talking about, let's call it like C-Click fix, streamlining. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there to see how we can continue to improve there. So I'd like to see that as a future agenda item. Maybe Mohammed might already have some ideas on that. If that turns out to be the case, we can opt to remove it. But I think for now, I'd like to see C-Click Fix streamlining follow-up as an additional item. So I'll make a motion to add that.
Well, give that a thumbs up.
Great.
Okay, that sounds good. I don't think I have anything else. We've got a lot here. Any announcements or comments?
Nothing on my side.
Awesome. I don't get anything on my side. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting at 5:17.
Sure. That's great. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.